The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
This week is supposed to be the end of the 90-day review into the origins of the coronavirus. Do you have any update on when that report would be released? What can we expect to see publicly?
Sure. It's actually tomorrow, just to mark your calendars. I would say that it typically takes a couple of days, if not longer, to put together an unclassified version to present publicly. And obviously, the president would be briefed first on any findings. So I don't have an exact date for you, but I would expect it will be a couple to several days after tomorrow.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that was Jen Psaki. She said that yesterday. And I was curious, I don't know about you, about this unclassified version of the intelligence community's review of whether the COVID pandemic originated in a Chinese lab. Well, it broke today. Good afternoon. I'm Drew Mariani. It's good to be with you. I am so grateful to be able to spend some time with you, give you a look at life, and explore some of the biggest issues of the day. I'm here for you, and hopefully we can hang out together. I'll be here all 3 hours. We have a lot to get into this afternoon, too. Let's start with this story, though. It's a big one. The deadline, of course, today was for our nation's intelligence community to report on how COVID-19 got started. And their collective answer was, you getting ready for this? Now, let me throw two possibilities out to you. A Chinese lab, that's one, right? Did it possibly somehow get out from the lab accidentally, on purpose? I would think accidentally. Or did it come from that meat market? You know, is it the result of bats? Do we know? Here's what the intelligence community report said. We don't know. We don't know. The reports, you know, Reuters was reporting that this, and I'll just quote them. Three U.S. government officials and a fourth person familiar with the scope of the investigation said they didn't expect to review the lead. They did not expect the review to lead to firm conclusions after China stymied early international efforts to gather key information on the ground. So you've got Chinese opposition there. And we came in, the World Health Organization really dropped the ball. They did zero, right? And China says, nope, no more. That's it. You're not coming back in. Why not? Well, shouldn't the world, shouldn't every habitable continent who's lost loved ones as a result of COVID-19 know the origins of this? Shouldn't we know? Look at the devastation to economies globally. I know so many people who are struggling today because of COVID-19. I just know so many people who've lost loved ones because of COVID-19. I think we have a right to know the truth. We have a right to know where this originated from. So instead, Reuters reported, says the report will include questions about further lines of inquiry because China won't let them in there. Jim Garrity of the National Review, he pointed out that, you know, that's why we have intelligence communities. They're supposed to be doing the hard work. They're supposed to be finding out what's really going on in these countries that don't like us. Like what happened in Nazi Germany, what happened in the Soviet Union. What is it about China that we face such incredible opposition to get this type of information? There was a press conference earlier today, and traveling back to the very beginning of COVID shutdowns, Mike Pompeo, he's the former U.S. Secretary of State, said in briefings that China needed to be held accountable. They should be held accountable about hiding the origins of COVID, which caused widespread devastation. Listen to what he had said. All right. So while Maggie gets that queued up, we'll go on. All right. Again, I'll try to play Mike Pompeo. Maggie now has it. All right, Maggie, go ahead and run it.
Don't know precisely where this virus originated from. There are multiple labs that are continuing to conduct work on contagious pathogens inside of China today. And we don't know if they are operating at a level of security to prevent this from happening again. Remember, this isn't the first time that we've had a virus come out of China. We would urge every country, all of our partners, to demand that we get answers for what happened here, but also that we continue to have, we get the transparency, that the world gets the transparency it needs to make sure that those who are conducting scientific research on complex viruses and pathogens are doing so in a way that doesn't create the risk that we get precisely the economic devastation and the enormous loss of life that we've all suffered as a result of this virus that came out of Wuhan, China.
That's Mike Pompeo, former U.S. Secretary of State. I hope one day the truth will surface. I mean, we look back at a century ago at the great Spanish flu, right? A terrible pandemic that took millions upon millions of lives. The loss of life from COVID-19 today versus what we saw a century ago, radically different. I mean, it was horrific. And if you go back even further, if you look at the bubonic plague and Black Death, and you see a third of Europe dying, I mean, the source of those things, we know where they originated from. We don't know the source of COVID-19. I think we should know. I mean, history is a way of repeating itself, doesn't it? We should know. But anyway, we'll see. I'll stay on top of that. I'll try to keep you abreast of what is being reported out there, just so you're in the know. Look, if you go to football games, and I don't know if you love football, like a lot of people love going to college games, right? Maybe the pros could be a little bit expensive. I know some families have trouble getting out to a pro football game, but there's something about being in a stadium full of people, right, cheering for your team. You may have a harder time getting into that stadium, whether it's at a college or in the NFL. You may now have to prove that you have been vaccinated or that you have tested negative for COVID-19 in order to get in. So both the University of Oregon and Oregon State University, they're going to require, you know, this mandate, this requirement for their home football games. But at the University of Oregon, it's more than that. Anyone who is 12 or older who plans on attending any event, they're going to have to show proof of vaccination. So the same thing's happening at Tulane University let me share this with you. I'll tell you what. Maggie, I don't have that in front of me. So if you could run this clip, set this up for me very quickly, Maggie, if you could, because I don't have that audio.
You betcha. So this is Surgeon General Vivek Murthy. He told CNN a few days ago that the Pfizer FDA approval will definitely push schools and businesses to create vaccine mandates. Wow.
I also think that for businesses and universities that have been thinking about putting vaccine requirements in place in order to create safer spaces for people to work and learn, I think that this move from the FDA will actually help them to move forward with those kind of plans. But all of this said, Brianna, I think what's important for us to realize is that we've had strong evidence, you know, from real-world data that this vaccine has been doing remarkably well and has maintained a strong safety profile.
So they're not alone. The University of Hawaii has announced their opening season games against Portland. They're going to be played in empty stadiums because of the recent rise in COVID there. Of course, the Raiders, we talked about them. We're going to see, and we'll talk about this tomorrow in greater detail, we're going to see more mandates now coming your way because of the fact that the Pfizer vaccine has been green-lighted. We'll take a look at that. I'll answer a lot of your questions. We'll even take a look at the impact that COVID has had on logistics and shipping. You might have realized it's taken a long time to get that new dishwasher, you know, or that product that you purchased. You might go to a store and see that, hey, the products are really slim. It's not that they haven't ordered them. It's taken a long time to arrive. We'll talk about that tomorrow. But one other story here we'd like to bring before you, and that's what's happening in Afghanistan. I'll continue to follow this throughout the week, but there are media reports right now that the president is planning to stick with that self-imposed deadline of getting all U.S. troops out of Afghanistan by a week from today. That's not going over well. There had been talk among NATO allies of extending the deadline because there are still thousands of Americans and a lot of other nationals and Afghanis who helped American troops. They need to get out of the country, right? And we're not going to do that in 7 days. We're just not going to do that. So the Taliban, they've made threats of some kind of, if you extend the deadline, there will be consequences. You know, and if we don't stay to this, for some reason, self-imposed deadline, you know, I think the administration is nervous, but I have a theory on it in some respects. I was saying to Maggie before the broadcast, I said, you know, I think we're going to move the deadline. I know the administration is saying we're not. I know our allies want us to move the deadline. I don't think they want to rock the boat. I don't think they want to make a threat to the Taliban right now. But I'm a little disgraced as the greatest military in the history of the world. You know, we are the modern-day Roman Empire today, right? Our reach is unbelievable. Our technology is off the charts. We could go in there with thermal drones and see these guys hiding behind, you know, cement walls. We could, if we wanted to, set a couple, you know, platoons in and clean house. But, Maybe that's a little too naive. You know, I think we need to go in and get our troops out. I think what's going to happen is they're placating the Taliban right now. But as we get closer to the date, that date's going to move. We're not going to leave any American behind. If we do, it will be the darkest shadow on the Biden administration. He's not going to want that to mar his legacy. So often pride drives a lot of these things. He wanted to be the president who got us out of Afghanistan. This is snowballing out of control is what's happening right now. And he certainly doesn't want this to mar his history. I would wager. And again, I don't work for the Defense Department, but I would wager, just looking at this thing objectively, we're not going to leave people behind. That deadline will move, even though we're not saying that, even though we're having these high, you know, these secret meetings with high-ranking Taliban members. The Taliban made threats of these consequences. The logistics of this operation, it's daunting, and I don't want to undermine that either. It's unbelievable, especially since we can only operate out of one airport, out of Kabul airport, right? Because for some reason, and again, I'm not a military expert, we abandoned the Bagram airfield in the middle of the night last month. Can somebody explain that one to me? It's hard to get your head around. There was a Taliban spokesperson, Suhail Shaheen. He tells Sky News on Monday that on August 31st, this deadline for the U.S. troops to withdraw, it's not going to move. He says, for the Taliban, that is a red line.
If the U.S. or the U.K. wanted to extend the 31st of August deadline in order to continue evacuations out of the country, would you agree to that?
No.
Why not?
This is something you can say it's a red line. President Biden announced this agreement that until 31st of August, they would withdraw all their military forces. So if they extend it, that means they are extending occupation, while there is no need for that. I think it will deteriorate the relation, that will create mistrust between us. If they are intent on continuing the occupation, so it will provoke a reaction.
Yeah, provoke reaction. We'll see what happens. Again, we'll monitor. This is a story that will continue to develop as the days tick by, but I'll tell you what, there's a lot of Americans, a lot of people who've helped us here that are in trouble right now. One American woman has been beaten by the Taliban, and she said she feels abandoned by her own country. She feels, in her words, contrary to what Jen Psaki would say, stranded in Afghanistan. She feels stranded. White House spokesman Jen Psaki, of course, took great exception to that. I don't know if you saw that soundbite. I'm sure you probably have. It's been all over the news that Americans have been stranded. You know, there's no evidence that they are stranded. Yeah, well, I'd like to trade places with you. You know, you go there and hope to get to an airport and try to get out. Representative Kara Miller, she's from West Virginia. She received a call this weekend from an American who was trapped in Kabul. And she was attacked every time she tried to reach the airport. It was rough. And despite the danger to herself, she wants this message shared with you. So listen to this.
Hour by hour, it's getting more difficult. Even when the cars pass by, I feel like they're going to stop by the door and they're the Taliban and they're going to come in and kill us. I'm really scared. Please help me whenever it's the soonest.
I'll play with you another piece of audio, too, coming up in a moment. I've got to change gears right now. Of one woman who felt like she was in a nightmare and just could not wake up. I've seen mothers have their babies trampled to death because of how narrow the way is to this airport. We'll talk more about this coming up a little bit later in the hour. I want to talk about the Taliban. I want to talk about Islam, too. And we will we'll dive into all that and break this down. I'll take a deeper look at it in our third hour today. So I hope you can stay with me. I do want to talk about one other thing that we're seeing in the country. You just heard what's happening at colleges around the country, especially with the University of Oregon and Oregon State and Tulane and others telling people that they can't go to football games unless they can prove they've been vaccinated. Cook County in Illinois which encompasses Chicago, has imposed a countywide mask mandate for the outdoors. But that's pretty tame compared to what's going on in countries right now around the world. Australia's been arresting people who venture outside what authorities consider a good reason. I saw a report last night where one man, there's actually a manhunt for him. They're looking for this guy. He was alone. He's supposed to be on lockdown. He's a 27-year-old kid, and he sneezed without covering his mouth in an empty elevator. It was all by himself. Not that that's right. But now there's a warrant out for his arrest. And if you see some of the chaos in Australia, it is unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. There is a church there that was fined $5,000, and its adult members were fined $1,000 each for having a Sunday service. For having a Sunday service. You were fined. They were called selfish. I saw another report of people who were selfish because they watched the sunset. Right? But a church was fined $5,000, and its adult members, all of them, fined $1,000 for going to church. New Zealand has basically shut itself down. You can't even talk with your neighbor at the grocery store. And similar things are happening in France. In a few moments, I'll be joined by Kathleen de Habsburg-Lorraine. She's seen it for herself. She's a former communication director for the American Life League and for the Diocese of Arlington. But then she married the Archduke, the great-grandson of Blessed Karl of Austria. And the two of them now live outside of Geneva in France, and she has seen firsthand the dangers of civil rights imposed by these restrictions. And we'll get her take on what's unfolding right now in Italy, what's unfolding now in France as well. But before I do, let me bring it home. And Maggie, cue up number six. I want to share the Gill Foundation. You know, President Biden, when we talk about religious freedom, President Biden's choice for ambassador to Switzerland is a man named Scott Miller. He's a leading figure in the LGBT advocacy patron, the Gill Foundation, and the foundation's funded groups that have split Christian denominations and threatened religious freedom here in the U.S. Miller's same-sex partner is a guy named Tim Gill, a very vocal LGBT activist and strategist, who, after the 2016 election, claimed his movement was headed into conservative states to, get this, punish the wicked. Oh, my gosh. What country do we live in? I mean, and again, we have to reciprocate with love, right? We got to turn around. We got to pray for Tim Gill, who's seriously misguided. I feel sad for him. I feel sad for Scott Miller. They want to go into conservative states to punish the wicked. Let me just share with you from the words of Tim Gill, from the mouth of Tim Gill himself, an interview on why the Gill Foundation exists. Here's the rationale, the mentality behind it.
When I look around the country, I see people who are victims of hate crimes, kids that are bullied at schools, people who are discriminated against at work, and families who aren't fully recognized. All of these people deserve fair and equal treatment and full recognition under the law. You know, it's funny, I didn't think that marriage would mean that much to me until I actually got married. Scott's the most important person in the world to me, and I want society to recognize that. I want to be treated equally, I want our relationship to be treated equally. Everything that we have as a society is built around the institution of marriage, and I think everyone should be able to share in it equally.
Yeah, I didn't think marriage meant anything until I got married, right? I mean, marriage has been totally redefined in this country. And I don't want to go off on a marriage rant, but, you know, that's why you and I really have to live good, holy marriages. You know, we need to educate our children on what marriage is really about. And there is a new book out. Speaking of marriage, I mean, you know, here's a great opportunity to get you plugged into something. I just endorsed it, in fact. And Maggie and I were just talking about it. Thank you, Maggie. You're right. Today, actually, Relevant Radio has just launched a brand new book. You might have read it before. Maybe we'll call it a relaunch. It's called Marriage Insurance. It's written by none other than Father Rocky, right? You know him. It's 12 Rules to Live By. I had taken a vacation. My wife and I went back, visit some family. We went to the beach. So I reread the book on my trip back east. And then I gave it an endorsement. I think you're going to love this. Again, this is free. I just want to make sure. I love the word free, and I think you will too. If you're having a troubled marriage, if you are confused over marriage, if you are trying to, you know, maybe form your kids and what marriage is all about, this is a great book, and it will really give you some strategies to help strengthen the marriage, avoid some of the pitfalls, or some fun things to do. Again, starting today, his book is going to be offered simply by going to relevantradio.com/marriage, okay? relevantradio.com/marriage. It's free. There's no shipping, no handling. Again, this is just a limited time offer. So I think it's great. We talk about, you heard Tim Gill, we talk about marriage being redefined. We see the chaos in the culture right now. You know, and maybe you feel like, Drew, I don't really understand how to defend marriage. I know it's between a man and a woman, but, you know, I can't even keep my own marriage strong, you're saying. You know, gosh, my spouse and I are always carping at one another. Are we falling out of love? Or, you know, maybe you're the child of a divorced parent and you're growing up and saying, I don't want to be divorced like my parents. What do I do? This book is divided up into 12 short, really easy read rules. Father came up with 12 rules. And it gives you some really concrete advice in terms of what you can do, you know, what you need to discuss before getting married, and then what can be done after getting married to make sure that your marriage is stable, that it's joy-filled, that it's long-lasting, that it is that union that God intended it to be. And I'll tell you what, like I said, I read it in the car. It was a quick read. It was a quick read, lots of practical tips. But if you wanted, here's how you get it. Go now. I'll try to mention it again, but free, free, free. All right. And it's a gift. Give it to somebody you love. Maybe your kids are having a tough time. Maybe they just got married. Maybe they're engaged right now. Maybe you said, look, I've been married 25, 30 years. You know, I'd love to rekindle my marriage. Check this out. Marriage Insurance, 12 Rules to Live by Father Rocky. Go to right now to relevantradio.com/marriage. relevantradio.com/marriage. And, whether, you know, first date or whether you now are 40 years in, this advice is for everyone. It is. I know you want a happy marriage, right? We all do. And if you want that lasting love, you want a holy marriage, believe it or not, you can have a strong marriage. In fact, if you are married, that's your vocation. You are called to work on it. It's a means, a pathway to greater holiness. It is a vocation. It is a sacrament that you entered into. And it's one that I think you can achieve the great heights of sanctity through. But check it out, okay? It's relevantradio.com/marriage. It's free and no shipping, no handling. Just say, hey, I want the book. We'll send it out to you, all right? I got to take a short little pause here. When we come back, we'll change gears. We'll talk a little bit more. In fact, we got a full show today. I do want to talk about the Biden ambassador. We'll get into that in greater detail. I think it's important to dive into that particular issue and look at religious freedom in our country. Look at the confusion over marriage. Look what's being talked to our kids. Look what they're being indoctrinated by. We are in a culture of free speech. We're in a battle of free speech versus cancel culture. That's where we are right now. And the people we put in charge, you know, the Biden's ambassador pick, you know, they have consequences. And it'll ripple out and it's going to affect those you love. So stay with me. When we come back, we'll dive into that and more.
Your daily dose of faith, hope, and charity. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, it's good to be with you today. Thanks for joining me. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll pray the chaplet, of course. I was talking a little bit about the president's appointment. Under President Trump, let's talk about our previous president. There were, I believe, at least 5 U.S. ambassadors who openly identified themselves as being LGBT in one or another, right? But he didn't start it. I mean, President Obama he went out of his way. He tried to appoint an openly gay person to be the ambassador to the Holy See. And that did not go well. I mean, really. Of all the places, the Holy See, right? So, unfortunately, it's not anything new to say that, hey, President Biden has appointed some people from the gay lobby to represent and be ambassadors. One of those people is Scott Miller. I was just sharing with you a clip moment ago. The president nominated him to be the ambassador to Switzerland and to Liechtenstein. It's a tiny little principality that borders Switzerland. And Catholic news agency reported that Mr. Miller is a leading figure at a place called the Gill Foundation. And you just heard what they were all about from the mouth of Mr. Gill himself. And the foundation funds, it supports, tries to advance various LGBT groups and organizations. But more than that, and this is really what concerns me in large part, they're a threat to religious liberty. And I've said to you before, I mentioned back in 2015 now, when the Obergefell decision took place, when we redefined marriage in this country, 2015, 2017, I'm trying to remember the date of that. I said the fruit of that decision, you're going to see, it's not just about same-sex couples being able to marry. You're going to see an attack on religious liberties in this country. That's what you're going to see. And I'm telling you, we're beginning to see it more and more. We see it with bakers, and we see it with photographers, and we see it with a lot of people who want to conscientiously object to participating in some of these things. But the threat to our religious liberty here in our country, it's rising. Tim Gill, who is an intimate partner of the ambassador designate, I should say, Ambassador Miller, Gill stated one time that his movement was headed into conservative states, as I just shared with you, to punish the wicked. That's what he wants to do, to punish the wicked. We're going to go into conservative states and punish the wicked. Who are the wicked? Who's in those conservative states? People who opposed redefining marriage. People who believe that marriage was between one man and one woman. So the foundation's also aligned with the Stryker Foundation. That's another group that funds groups like New Ways Ministries, which doesn't support the teachings of the church when it comes to same-sex relationships. So with these LGBT advocates being chosen as ambassadors, it's little wonder that the rainbow flag's been flying at our embassies, right? You see that? They're flying at embassies overseas. They've been draped over balconies, except one exception. You know where they're not draped? You know where they're not flying in flagpoles? Muslim-majority countries. You know, the populace would probably march on the embassy there. That's not going to fly. Let's talk about it a little bit. I think it's important to take a big picture view of this. I always want to be charitable as we look at these issues, but I also want to bring to you truth. I think it's really important to do that. And I'm joined this afternoon by Todd Huizinga. He is the Religious Freedom Institute Senior Fellow for Europe, a former U.S. diplomat for two decades. And he wrote a book you might want to check out. It's called The New Totalitarian Temptation: Global Governance and the Crisis of Democracy in Europe. He joins me today. Great to have you with me today, Todd. Good afternoon.
Thank you, Drew. Great to be here.
Now, obviously, an ambassador can't change laws in countries, right, overseas. They can't impact laws here in the States. But an ambassador, the way I see it, does represent the values of a country. He's representing the nation. Have these... And I don't know, so I'm really turning to you for an answer on this. Have the LGBT ambassadors, have they tried to strong-arm other countries and liberalizing their laws on this issue? Have they been pretty neutral on it? What's been the impact of them, if anything at all?
Yes, the U.S. has been at times pushing an LGBT agenda on other countries. I'll talk about that in a minute. But I'd like to, in the spirit of charity, as you were saying, I'd like to first say that, you know, the system in the United States is that the ambassador or the president appoints ambassadors, and the ambassador under the Constitution is the personal representative of the president, not the personal representative of the American people or of Congress or of anything, but rather the personal representative of the president in the country where he is serving. And so the tradition has always been that, you know, presidents appoint people who agree with them on their issues and people who are part of their constituency,
right,
to ambassadorial posts. And obviously, the LGBT constituency is a very, very strong Biden constituency. So he has the right as the elected president to appoint the people that he wants. Let's now hope that it won't become kind of an ideological ambassadorship focused on LGBT rights, but that he'll actually be representing broad U.S. interests in Switzerland.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. You know, back in, I believe it was June, during Pride Month, the American Embassy in Rome, to the Holy See, they draped a rainbow flag over the balcony, but there was no rainbow flag flying in the embassy in, let's say, Saudi Arabia or some other Muslim-majority country. What's the difference there? How do you read that?
Well, there have been attempts to have pride marches and so forth and so on in Muslim countries, amazingly enough. And I say amazingly enough because we have vital U.S. interests, obviously, in Muslim countries, as we see, for example, in Afghanistan right now. And Muslim countries are generally very, very conservative, of course, about traditional marriage and about lesbian and gay people and so forth and so on. And while we definitely want to fight against what actually is discrimination against LGBT people, there's absolutely no reason, given our vital interests in that area of the world, to try to push kind of an LGBT lobbyist agenda on them. So that unfortunately has happened. And I guess I'll say about the the rainbow flag at the embassy to the Holy See, to me that represents truly a slap in the face to Catholic Americans and all traditionally Christian Americans. I'm a traditional and Orthodox Protestant. You know, I see that as kind of a slap in the face. There was no reason to pick the Holy See to raise the rainbow flag next to the American flag.
No, I agree with you. I was stunned when I saw that. Joe Biden is a Catholic, too. You would think that his perspective would be a little bit different. You know, Scott Miller, let's talk about him and the Gill Foundation as well. Scott Miller's confirmed as ambassador to Switzerland, of course, and Liechtenstein. What's that mean for our country's priorities, you know, in terms of what's going to be going on there, if anything at all? That's how do you see the imprint of that ambassadorship on that country? Do you see any effect at all?
I don't see a particularly strong effect on our relations with Switzerland because of the appointment of that particular ambassador, especially since, you know, the next president may well appoint a conservative Catholic supporter or a conservative Protestant supporter to be the ambassador in Switzerland. I remember under George Bush, when I was in the State Department, I went to the swearing-in ceremony for Bush's ambassador to Switzerland, and he quoted the Book of Proverbs in his speech. A lot of people were shocked about that in the very secular State Department, but I thought it was great. Anyway, I don't think there'll be a big effect on our relationship with Switzerland, but I do believe it's very important in that it shows that there is a real conflict in the United States, as there is in Europe, about the whole question of LGBT rights versus religious freedom for traditional Christians, Muslims, Jews. And the United States is, and this is the important thing, I think, that the appointment of Scott Miller symbolizes. The United States is, especially at the UN, for example, truly pushing the idea of LGBTQ rights as human rights on the rest of the world. Now, I think we need to realize this is what Joe Biden believes. He's doing it sincerely. It's not a trick. And so the question that we're all facing, and the reason that religious freedom is so much under threat because of LGBTQ rights, is that those who believe in that believe that these are human rights. And of course, they're going to promote those human rights. And they don't believe, unfortunately, that the right to religious freedom of traditional Christians and other faiths is as important as pushing LGBTQ rights. A fundamental misunderstanding, I think, of what human rights mean.
Yeah, it's such a good point. I could not agree with you more. Let's talk religious liberty, and I hope I'm not being too melodramatic about this, but I am concerned that we're seeing greater animus towards the rights of people who, you know, hold Christian values or just religious liberty in general, especially when it comes to something like being able to go to church during a public health lockdown. We saw those problems. What do you see for the future of religious liberty in this country? Is there going to be greater animus, greater attack, greater attempts to limit that because it runs diametric to, I don't know, some of the agenda that other parties want? And I can name some of those, but do you get my point? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that, unfortunately, all signs do point to increasing animus against traditional Christians and an increasingly militant LGBT lobby, an increasingly militant pro-abortion lobby, all of which very often suffers from a true animus against Christianity. I mean, one thing that we Christians can be very happy about is that God can do what he wills. If God wills that, you know, this Amen. Animus toward the faith decreases or stops in the future in the United States against all the current signs, then that's what will happen. So we need to remain faithful. Remember that God is in control. But yes, all signs do point to that. And one of those signs is the push for the Equality Act, which Tim Gill and Scott Miller have been pushing probably more thoroughly and persistently than perhaps anyone else in the United States.
Well, I've been talking about that for a long time. That is a real danger and a real threat if it becomes a reality. Hey, I want to thank you for joining us. If you want to get in, of course, our number here is 888-914-9149, but I'll have my guest for another moment or two. Before I wrap it up, I do want to talk to you a little bit about your book. I know that that's available, you know, Amazon or major bookstores, The New Totalitarian Temptation, Global Governance and the Crisis of Democracy in Europe. Why don't you put a quick plug in for that? What's that all about and what will people find in it?
Well, thank you. Yes, the book is about the European Union and about U.S. relations with the European Union. And it explains what the European Union is, which most people understandably don't know because we don't hear about it in the American media. The European Union is not just a free trade area. The European Union stands for the idea that we can reach world peace by building institutions above the nation state level and giving some of our national sovereignty to these institutions to promote international cooperation and thus end wars between nations ultimately. That's what the book is about. It explains how the EU wants to do that. It explains that idea, while understandable, of course, it all started after World War I and World War II, perfectly understandable, that Europeans wanted to figure out how to stop war. They've been devastated by it. And of course, we all want to stop war if possible. But unfortunately, it's a utopian political idea. It's the idea that we can change human nature via politics rather than the correct idea that we need to adapt politics to the unchangeable human nature.
Amen to that.
That we have. And so that's what the book is about. And it's also about why that vision for the world, which is opposed to the U.S. vision of the world, where we base the law we live under our national constitution and a national sovereignty. So it shows how these two visions of the world are opposed, so that even though the Europeans are our greatest friends, they're also sometimes our worst antagonists.
That's so true. Is there a difference very quickly between Donald Trump and Joe Biden in terms of that worldview?
Very much so. Donald Trump is a sovereigntist. He believes in U.S. national sovereignty, and he believed that it was his job as president to put American interests first, because it was the American people that he was accountable to. Whereas Joe Biden does share that view that's more and more common on the American left, that, yeah, we want to have international cooperation and promote international law and develop some sort of way of organizing the world, right, in which all nations can cooperate together and pool their sovereignty, very similar to the EU. So yes, quite a difference.
Yeah, not at the cost of our sovereignty. Yeah. You know. So hey, Todd, I want to thank you for being here. I really do. I'm grateful for your time. Check out the book. It's called The New Totalitarian Temptation: Global Governance and the Crisis of Democracy in Europe. My thanks to Todd Huizenga. He is the Religious Freedom Institute Senior Fellow for Europe and a former U.S. diplomat. We'll be back with more right after this. Stay with us. This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values and fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit RelevantRadio.com/Forester.
Thank you. I can't believe I got one.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
888-914-9149.
Coming up in about 10 minutes, we'll pray the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. I want to share with you a quick story about healing and a doctor I met. Pretty cool story. Before I do that, though, I just want to thank you. You know, I didn't mention this to you yesterday, but we had such an unbelievable pledge drive. And I'm just so grateful to you for your generosity. I want to bring you up to speed. The latest report I got now is over $3.2 million that have come in. You know, our goal was initially $2.7 million. And Relevant thought it would be great if all of us, you and me, we partnered together and we went ahead and we gave a certain percentage, we tithed to those who had far less than us, you know, especially those in Haiti who have lost home, who have no food, no clothing. They need to bury the dead down there. It's a pretty tragic situation. So this is really a spiritual work of mercy. It's a corporal work of mercy is really what I should say. It's a corporal work of mercy, burying the dead, giving drink to the thirsty, feeding the hungry, clothing the naked, right? You can go through all those different things, giving shelter. And you are participating in it. So I just want to say thank you. If you were away last week, I know sometimes people are taking their vacations or they're just busy. They missed the show. It was an unbelievable pledge drive. I mean, just crazy. You can still get in. If you have not donated to help Relevant Radio in the mission of bringing Christ to the world, and we do it. We look at these issues that sometimes aren't pleasant, like I just talked about, you know, about these ambassadorships, about this attack on religious liberty, about these agendas that are infiltrating our culture, our high levels of government that we're exporting to other nations, the indoctrination of our kids, so many of these other things. And we try to say, what's the solution? What's the answer to it? You know, you can find that in the teachings of the church. You can find that in the words of Jesus Christ himself. And we try to bring that to you on a daily basis. So thank you for making that possible. Thank you for ringing the chaplet. We'll pray the chaplet in about 7 minutes. All right? You and I will pray together. So if you have a special need, a want, an intention that you need prayer for, I'd love to pray for you. Okay, we're going to do that coming up. And thank you for sending me your answered prayers. I know God hears this prayer. And I see it all the time. We have books of answered prayers here at Relevant Radio. People have written in and said, oh my gosh, I called into the chaplet. You're not going to believe this miracle that has taken place. Please email me your answered prayers, drew@relevantradio.com. Okay, and just in the byline, put answered prayers. So it gets kind of flagged. I can definitely know that it's an answered prayer and I'm going to get to share that. We're in a time right now, I think, where we live longer. But in a way, that drags on with chronic disease, right? Plaguing large segments of our society in kind of those final years, sometimes those final decades. Maybe you're in that group right now. Maybe you're suffering a degenerative disorder of some sort, right? Maybe you are in chronic pain. Maybe you are battling cancer. You know, maybe you're going through something you really need healing for. And we pray for all sorts of things, conversion, finances, etc. I really think God often demonstrates in a powerful way his love for us in so many of these, you know, these healing miracles. You know, there's a doctor I know, and I'll share a story with you. Down in Venezuela, I was with him when I was a documentary filmmaker who received an unbelievable cure from cancer. And I know cancer sometimes is a death sentence for a lot of people, but it was an eye opener for me. I was a young guy. I was, you know, on location there, and I'd seen this doctor. He showed me how the cancer had metastasized. And he went to a place called Betania, Venezuela. It's a little area where the Virgin Mary has appeared. And it's a church-approved apparition. A Eucharistic miracle took place there. The Mother of God appeared to now she's servant of God, Maria Esperanza. And on March 25th, 1984, the very day that John Paul II consecrates the world to Our Lady, you know, fulfilling the Fatima message, she appears visibly to 105 people who were present on this little farm. They were all gathered for a picnic. There was a general in the army. There was a medical doctor. There were all these people. And she appeared seven times that day. These eyewitnesses, very credible, their testimonies were submitted to the local bishop, and that apparition was approved. From that moment forward, people began to come there, and people would see the Virgin Mary very visibly. And there were many, many miraculous healings. And this doctor was one of those whose cancer was completely and totally healed. And I want you to know, because when I saw that, I think God, and I've often said this to you in the past, I think God has allowed me to see food multiply. He's allowed me to see statues weep. He's allowed me to see cancer disappear. He's allowed me to witness mystics bilocate. He's allowed me to see miracles that defy the laws of nature. Why? I had no idea that I'd be sitting behind a microphone one day talking to you, that we would be in a relationship, that we'd have this friendship, that we would support each other in conversation and in prayer and his journey we called life. And I learned a valuable lesson when I was down there, because I realized that God can heal anything. Are there really extraordinary, miraculous cures? You know, yes. Are there spiritual and physical cures? Yes. There certainly are. You know, there are great, great miracles. I want you to know never to give up hope. I've seen, and I've read, as you probably have, countless cases in which people were told that they were given just months or weeks to live, right? They've gone to places like Lourdes, France, or to Betania, Venezuela, or they stepped out, they prayed the chaplet, or they turned to God, or they went to a healing service. And those people who were told they had only weeks or months to live have rebounded, and they've gone on for years or for decades. I really believe Cardinal Burke is one of those miracles. Here's a man on his deathbed, diminishing before everyone's eyes, on a ventilator, battling COVID, dealing with comorbidities. The odds were stacked against him. But what happened? The faithful gathered in prayer. They filled adoration chapels. You and I prayed every day this chaplet of divine mercy for him. Masses were offered. The rosary was offered. And that man yesterday was sitting up in a chair, ventilator free, on the road to recovery. And I never want to diminish medicine, because God, that's God's gift to us. I think our intellect and the gift of medicine is a wonderful thing. The medical profession is a gift, you know. But I believe that God worked a miracle there. Our medical profession is a blessing, and we should pray for those in it, you know, that they can be instruments of God. You know, how do you prevent cancer? You know, what do you do when it occurs? You need faith. That's the first thing you need. You need a lot of prayer. I love those stories of those who've recovered almost Lazarus-like. You know, the man who was in a state of rigor mortis when a simple prayer brought him back to life, you know, or those who have simple faith had rescued children or others from paralysis or malignant tumors disappeared, who were approaching Jesus in the scripture was denied a healing. Nobody was denied, right? If somebody came to Jesus, I don't know one scripture story where the Lord told him, no, I'm not going to heal you, right? So from Lourdes to the laying on of hands, God demonstrates over and over again that he is a God of healing. He is. And scripture says, it talks about these supernatural cures, you know, the scriptures are filled with stories demonstrating that Jesus heals. and he heals as much today. I would maybe even argue more today than he did when he walked the earth. I can't tell you how many mental and physical or spiritual or health restorations have taken place to those who have really sought God's mercy. Now, suffering can be redemptive, and we should embrace it. Suffering can be a tremendous gift and a path to greater holiness, you know? And sometimes suffering is a simple part of the aging process in life. Maybe it's an act of God's mercy as we get closer to the threshold of eternal life. So if you are suffering, embrace it, use it, offer it up. But never underestimate the power of prayer. Never underestimate the power of God's mercy to liberate, to free, and to heal.